Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tim Holly. This is Brett Weber. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. S&P futures down. How can we be down? 2750. Dow futures down 169. Nasdaq futures down 132. That's not even half of yesterday, but certainly not in the Dow, which was up like 500 and something. S&P, almost half, but we'll see how that works. So we've got all kinds of election results. To say this is crazy, Mr. Weber and I were just talking about it. This stuff is crazy. I don't know. Kevin, how are you?
I am doing great, and I totally agree with your words. We should have Kevin O'Neill with us. Everybody should have Kevin O'Neill with them.
Oh, God. So the only thing I'm hoping for is, you know, Biden's an older dude, and he appears it's somewhere along the line to have had some common sense. Who knows if he still does. I sure hope he doesn't come out and say that he has a mandate with this close of an election.
Well, if he doesn't have the Senate, he won't have a mandate, but now we'll see how that shakes out, too.
Yeah, we got to tell you, I was digging through all this stuff yesterday, and every time you dig deeper, you come across a surprise. I'm looking at the Senate numbers, and it looks like the Republicans kept the Senate. And then I'm digging through all this stuff, and I'm going, well, they don't have like 51 people or 52 people, you know, all in, and it turns out there's going to be a double runoff in Georgia, it looks like. The one guy's, I don't know the end, Maddie. I don't know if maybe you're Mr. Internet Guru, or maybe you know off the top of your head. How many states and Senate races have this 50% mandate? I mean, we do on the, I mean, for those that, a little bit of education here, some places like the city of Chicago, and I do not remember when this happened, maybe Maddie does, city of Chicago used to be, I'll say, somewhat standard, where you ran for the Democratic mayor spot, and you ran for the, you know, the Republican, and I guess you could run as a independent. Lar Daley always did. He was the only one who did. America First, Lar Daley. Somewhere along the line, they decided to stop doing that. And I don't know, Evergreen Park, where I grew up, the village of Evergreen Park, was always like this, where you could never run as a Democrat or a Republican. You always had a up with a new party, so you're always the good government party, and next year you were the better government party. You can only use the name like one election in a row. So it was allegedly non-denominational, even though probably everybody knew who everybody was. The city of Chicago went the same way. That's why we ended up with Lori Lightfoot. There were probably 15 people ran, and she only had, I'm going to say, 90,000 votes, which got her into the top two. And then she ran for mayor, and then everybody remembers the mayoral election between her and Tony, but really, the election was the primary one. Now, some states seem to have done that. I think in Illinois, the three people ran for senator, and Durbin ended up with 49%. I think he's still in. I'm not positive. But in Georgia, if you don't get 50%, there's a runoff. So a third-party person won, ran, and what, the guy who's... This guy, Purdue's got like 49.8%. The guy second is like 48.7%. And somebody's got like 2%, which has screwed up the whole deal. So they're now going to have probably a runoff election in January, which they also have with the other Senate seat. That Loeffler lady, who's the richest person in Congress, was losing. And they have about eight people in that election. So she, this African-American guy, are running over there. So they're actually going to have two elections in January. Is that where it is, you think, right now, Kevin?
Yeah, that's what I believe is going to happen. And I just pulled it up. Two states have general election runoffs that you have to have a majority. So it's that's Georgia and Louisiana. 10 states require runoff elections if you don't have a majority in your primary.
Okay. So when you get down to the final thing,
it's Arkansas, Georgia, Mississippi, North Carolina, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Texas, and Vermont. So a number of southern states plus Vermont. And Vermont says here only for tie votes, and I have to dig into that because I can't imagine having a tie.
Well, right now,
but
really.
Maybe it's just a provision, and maybe it's a just-in-case provision.
Now, having said
which
that,
would be wise, actually. You know, there would be
having said that, we could have a tie in...
What would you do if you had an exact tie? You're not going to coin flip it.
Well, funny you should mention that and bring this up. Sometimes when you bring things up, they happen. That's what my mother used to say. We could, I won't say easily, we could have a tie at Georgia and Pennsylvania. They're that close.
Just well, there. Yes, but the probability of it is so small with that many.
Well, that which brings
it
up the next question. If you were a statistical guy like your brother was very good at, let's say we went to like a third grade statistics class, if there is such a thing, does anybody not think that Georgia and Pennsylvania and maybe a couple other states here are really dead heats? And the idea of one winner is a little odd considering today's world.
Well, that you have that circumstance. You have circumstances like in Georgia, where you have some real statistical anomalies. That Fulton County, which is part of Atlanta, is up 92,000 in Democratic votes versus 2016, and up 101,000 versus Obama in 2008. Now. You know, could be, it could be true, but boy, that's a, you know, those kinds of things are statistical anomalies. And
yep.
So what do I always tell you about statistics? That doesn't mean anything by itself. It just raises, it leads you to the next question. So it would be curious, and maybe we'll find out. Maybe someone will do a little crazy investigative reporting and say, okay, how, you know, what was it that made that happen? Because, you know, you'd want to know, if you were a Democrat, you want to know what worked. And if you were a Republican, you'd want to know what you have to counter. So it would seem like, you know, that when you see anomalies like that, you definitely want to investigate.
You know, I wonder, I mean, if we're all here and healthy and arguing about this 4 years from now, what the COVID change in people's living arrangements is going to do to the traditional areas. I mean, a lot of the stuff around Atlanta, I've been listening, you know, obviously to the news, and they all keep talking about this tremendous change in the demographics in the suburbs of Atlanta and things like that. Now, is that all within 4 years? It seems like a pretty quick period of time to change demographics that much.
Yeah, how did it affect voter registrations and such?
Well, that would be 8 years, actually.
And I don't know the answer to that.
Well, for Obama, that would be 8 years, but still. And you know what? I was kind of surprised. I mean, first of all, you should never say all Irish people do this, or even, you know, or all black people do this, or whatever. But I was stunned. They had a lady on who actually gave a pretty, CNBC of all places, gave a pretty serious rendition of Hispanic voters and the difference between the voting patterns of people from Cuba and people from Puerto Rico is mind-boggling. Cuban
people. Oh, do not, and I've known this for a long time, Tom. You never say Hispanic and mean everybody who has a heritage that leads to a Spanish-speaking country. It's Puerto Ricans, Mexicans, it's Cubans, it's Venezuelans, Guatemalans, all different, individuals, of course, are different, but when you look at voting patterns of them or, impressions, policy impressions and policy things that they support, it's different across the board. It would be perilous, to come to the conclusion that just because you speak Spanish as either a first or a second language, that
she was talking about how the people from Cuba, and I happen to know because my stepfather had a, how long ago this was, when he worked for Waltham Watch here in Chicago, he had a Cuban lady who was his secretary slash assistant. I'll tell you, you talk about somebody who ran the place. I mean, she was about as efficient and as nice, but boy, if it was, I mean, nobody got in her way, not even him. It was her place. I mean, talk about people who are anti-socialist that love to work. I mean, I shouldn't be generalizing like this, but they pretty much went for Trump. And the people from Puerto Rico that are here that can't stand the all his comments regarding the place after the hurricane, and they feel that it was a totally half-assed response, were like 90% Biden, because they can't stand Trump because
everybody's when you start looking at the roots for many of the ethnic groups, you know, you're getting different experiences. So when you say I can't stand socialists, well, yeah, if you're from Venezuela and you have family in Venezuela, you're going to feel a whole lot differently about anything that even smacks of socialism than a lot of other people might, because there's the experience that we have there and you know what it's done to that country. You're going to Cubans are going to feel the same way about what Castro did to their country. So I'll say ignorant, and I don't mean that in the most critical sense. I mean that in the sense that people just don't understand that often enough the leanings are different. There's, you know, some countries are more Catholic than others, although many of the Hispanic heritage countries have a lot of roots in Catholicism, and so, you know, there's a lot of abortion voters in Hispanic groups. They aren't as socially liberal as the Democrats would like to think.
Well, I mean, I certainly put myself in that category. I mean, a lot of people who are feel that there's limits to this. I mean, I want to start
right,
that argument.
If you're Catholic and you're very strict, you know, there's a lot of Catholics in the U.S. who are, you know, who would say I'm a Catholic, but you know, I don't believe this part of Catholicism. I don't believe that. You have more Hispanic people who are devoutly Catholic, and the Catholic doctrine as it pertains to same-sex marriage, as it pertains to abortion, as it pertains to birth control, etc., are right on board with it. So, just like in the U.S., a lot of older white Catholics are more inclined that way versus younger Catholics who, you know, are kind of, you know, a la carte menu Catholics.
Well, my dentist voted for Bush because of the abortion issue, and one day I wander in to get my teeth is cleaned, and he was absolutely outraged with the invasion of Iraq. He's like, what in God's name are we doing? And I said, well, you know, attack, when you're a single-issue voter, you got to take the good with the bad, buddy. He looked at me and he goes, you know, you're absolutely right, and I don't really like this part of the bad. You know, so that is the truth, right? I mean, if you're a single-issue voter, nobody comes with a single issue. The only thing economically
there are no single issue parties, and there is no single issue government. So,
well, the one thing that I on the economic side is people like to label with words, hence the name like the Patriot Act, which was anything other than patriotic. Gave everybody I remember that thing, Kevin, and there's no point digging it up now, although I will for a second just because it flashed through my feeble brain. There were instances in there. I mean, I don't doubt. I mean, I read a lot of stuff about World War II. There's no question in my mind that the Kevin O'Neill, Matt Weber, you know, PT boat engine manufacturer probably had enough cachet in Washington to get a price for the PT boat engines that was, you know, 5 or 10%, more than maybe, you know, it could have been with some spectacular auction. But you know, you were in Buffalo and your people got paid a little more than maybe they should have, and they all spent the dough at the local bar, and compared to the the crap the Federal Reserve's doing now, throwing money around the place, it was like the pimple on the ass of an elephant, right? And it probably didn't really do any damage at all in the long run. But then when you started talking about what was the act after Katrina, or the Patriot Act, where they were talking about how so many places...
Or No Child Left Behind.
Well, there are so many places in Washington, mostly in Washington, which is why there's the hell out of me, the people who live there, not saying they're all bad, but how many places got these... Most of them were Bush cronies, essentially, because they were in charge. Got, like, these software programs, to where... some kind of a security thing or something, and they would get the program or whatever they were supposed to do, and immediately these things were, $500,000 deals or $1 million deals or $2 million deals. They immediately would subcontract it to like Honeywell for like half the price, and Honeywell was happy to get it. So the guys wouldn't even do it, And same thing with Katrina, where they were talking about people cleaning up New Orleans. By the time you subcontracted it down, you and I might get this huge job to clean up, was it the Fifth Ward? By the time it got down there, it was on like the third subcontract person. You see some guy in a dump truck with three illegals from Mexico making $5 an hour cleaning a street. When we originally got the deal, it was for like union wage and everything else. And you know what? That, Kevin, I don't think went on during World War II to that extent, where you and I would just immediately take the PT boat, engine contract and give it off to Matty Weber for half the price. I mean, I don't think that happened. I don't think people would have got away with it. They might have got shot. But some of the crap now, the stealing is just, and that's my long way of going with this, is when you label somebody a socialist or label somebody a communist or whatever because of their political things and what they don't like about what government's doing. The one way you can always turn that conversation your way, always is a long time, but most of the time can turn it your way is, well, define for me what you think our current situation is. Well, gee, it's capitalist. Is it really? Is it competitive capitalism? Well, yeah. So do you think Commonwealth Edison, Google, those people are competitive towards you? Well, no, they're not, obviously. Well, okay, then name me 5 or 10 businesses which are still competitive. I said, why do you think these other people want to change that or think something's wrong with it? I mean, I'm all for going back. I have the same mentality you do, believe it or not, regarding there's still a chance we could get competitive in the healthcare industry and some of these other industries if we put our mind to it and don't let these people pull the wool over the people's eyes in Washington and just jam money in their back pocket. I'm still a believer, although it's getting weaker, Kevin, to be honest with you. I don't know about you.
Well, I'm certainly not optimistic, and one of the reasons I'm not optimistic about healthcare is very simple, is that even let's say Trump were to win, and he talks about wanting to roll out a healthcare plan, and says, "Oh, of course we'll protect pre-existing conditions." Well, I'm sympathetic to people who have pre-existing conditions. I think that's a problem. That's a real problem for them. But what? That's not how insurance works. Insurance doesn't say your house is burning, call up your insurance agent and get a policy. So what do you do? You start and to me this is one of the biggest drivers, because and it's really important because it really drives up the cost of insurance for everybody when it's mandated. Why would anybody have pre-existing conditions? Well, I didn't buy insurance when I could have and should have. That would be one. I lost my job and lost my insurance as a result of that. That's another one. And the third one might be that, I've had a condition since childhood. I'm no longer eligible to stay on my parents' insurance policies, and so therefore I have a pre-existing condition. Well, the first one is not my problem. You should have bought insurance, and now it's going to cost you. The second one can be addressed by uncoupling insurance and employment, which I have suggested ways to do that in the past, and I'm not going to get into that plan right now. And the third one, then, is what's left. It's not that many people, and we, society can make a choice to say, okay, we want to address that part of pre-existing conditions, and support, you know, support people in that circumstance. See, you know, to me, that's, you know, if that's what you wanted to have a conversation about with healthcare, then I'd be all in. If you wanted to start talking about enforcing antitrust laws, I'd be all in. I just don't see, I'm not optimistic, Tom, because I don't see anybody talking about it that way.
Nobody will. I mean, there's caveats in the healthcare that somehow or another they're the puddle you won't step into because the water's hot or something, because you can't address costs at all because the insurance companies run the place and the hospitals run the place. I mean, the idea that you have Rush and Northwestern and these places put, you know, billions of dollars into these buildings that are designed to charge, you know, $2,000 a night or whatever it is to stay there. You can't, you know, there's no way you can redo that thing for those people. But there's several things. After all this time, after Obamacare, after Hillary Care, after Trump's, you know, ridiculous attempt to fix it all or change it all, at the end of the day, you still have a health care insurance being tax deductible for companies and not for people, which is one of the incredibly wrong stools of the whole system from day one, right? I mean, that's insane. And you can't address the part where you mentioned the on principle or lack of principle, I'm not going to say which, you mentioned it's somebody who knew they had a problem that was on their parents' thing or something, and all of a sudden they now don't have insurance. Okay, I suppose if somebody went without insurance and all of a sudden got cancer, I guess you could say it's on them because they didn't have insurance the whole way. But what I don't want to have happen that somebody can't possibly fix is if I go in because I got cancer and I never, suppose I had a bunch of money and I just said, screw it, I'm self-insuring. I don't need to go to Northwestern and have my cancer treatment be three times as expensive as if I had Blue Cross.
Yeah, that's the antitrust part of it, yep.
That absolutely needs a change. But like you say, neither one of these bumps running for office has any intention or ability to change any of the things I just said. Or the fact that every single, talk to people, you and I are not kids anymore. There's people we know that are on all kinds of prescription drugs. And every single person listened to their story. I mean, Audrey's on, you know, a couple things. She's in perfect health as far as I can see. But she's had two or three things that were part of the fight-hour jobs at Walmart. Was that like 5 years ago, 8 years ago? Where Walmart had the fight-hour generic drugs? She goes, one of them is now 170, 175, and the other one's like 60. That's in like 5 years, Kevin. From fight-hours, because they got bought by whoever... Got bought back by whoever made them in the first place, or whatever.
Got bought by a manufacturer, and all of a sudden they own the generic market too, and they can jack the prices back up.
Yeah. So I mean, if we can't attack anything like that, and it's really hard to attack it when you've got the baggy pants on and the guy keeps jamming money in your back pocket. I mean, there's no way that this Senate, these representatives, either one of these two presidents, Trump maybe, because he doesn't take that much money from people. Although I don't know about the drug industry, there's no way these people are bought and paid for, Kevin. And I was talking a couple weeks ago about the depths of how many people in Illinois that are running for state representative or state senator have had a more than $10,000 contribution from a drug company. And it's unconscionable. And yet, there it is. And
and magically they buy the argument that you need 17 years of protection to cover your R&D expense. Otherwise, you would never do research and development because, my God, who would ever do R&D into a product that might be profitable without the 17-year protection?
Right.
You know, it's absurd.
Well, I'm of the camp, really, that, I mean, depends on who becomes president. I mean, and everybody's got all this craziness with the stock market. We were down last week, we're up this week, so I'm not going to say craziness, but the idea that, you know, these people just keep hawking away that, God, when we have a split Congress and a Democratic president, the market is the... There's no such thing as statistics on something like this. Given every single four-year period, it's like baseball or football. Every year is a different team, right? It may be the Yankees winning 3 years in a row, but if you're the manager, you're going to say every one of those 3 years was different because the group was different, the way you managed them was different. Some were strong here, some were stronger there. I mean, nothing's ever the same. Yet I look at these guys, and Carl's going to be on a second hour, and I hope what I've done, hopefully, to educate the listeners a little bit, is to try and get yourself, instead of just focusing in on the one person you like or don't like, look at the numbers over a 25-year period. You can't tell the difference when one left and one the other. Now, does anybody really think, given you and I may say we have totally different political views, and we run for the village president of Evergreen Park. Boy, Kevin thinks this way, and the chief thinks this way. I hate Kevin. I love the chief. I hate the chief. I love Kevin. All of a sudden, we get in there now.
Probably going to be the latter.
Could be. So, but all of a sudden, we're in there, and we're a couple of hay seats, and we walk in, and then all of a sudden, the CFO, where hell he is for the town, says, "Well, Mr. O'Neill or Mr. Howe, whichever one of you two manages the land in here, here's where you are. We're friggin' broke. You know, we don't have any money. And this, by the way, this is a problem, and these five streets are nothing but bumps, and they're falling apart, and this bridge is going to fall over tomorrow. It's the only bridge in the town." At the end of that meeting, Kevin, I don't care if we're Solomon or if we're Attila the Hun, our policies are almost the same, because you're dealing with what you're dealing with. Does it really matter which one of these?
What you're doing is, you're talking about how smaller government might operate or local government operates, because it's much more practical and less ideological. But it flips the farther you go up the food chain. So what you're doing is you're making an argument for less federal government, more local government, because at that point, like I said, it becomes more practical. Local government also tends to care more about the citizens. I'm not talking about Chicago. I'm just talking about most local governments. They tend to care more. There may or may not be more competence. That varies from one to the other, and we can talk a little bit more about that after the
break. Well, we got to head off the break. But actually, no, Kevin, I was being more like Curly and the Three Stooges. You're a victim of circumstance. You can tell people how much you're going to spend, but if you're broke, you can't spend, right? S&P futures down 25, NASDAQ futures down 113. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie. This is Mel Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. Carl Denninger's second hour because we've got the labor numbers coming out. We're looking at about 500,000 people coming back to work, and we'll see if that happens. S&P futures down 26.75 now. Dow futures down 150. S&P futures down 127. Again, it kind of pales from the rally yesterday, certainly the whole week. DAX down 122. That's 1%. They were up like 20 amp yesterday. FTSE down 10. Now, they were not up that much yesterday, so they're down 10 today, 0.2%. CAC around down 37. That's 0.7%. We're in Asia. We got the Nikkei up 219, 0.9%. Shanghai down 7.2. Hang Seng up 17. Let's call that one flat for those guys. This is a review of yesterday. Dow up 542. S&P up 67. NASDAQ up 300. So we're not even. We're a third of the way on the S&P and the NASDAQ. So no danger here of erasing yesterday's gains, at least not yet. Bonds, 0.77. Again, I refer everybody to, I believe it was Tuesday night after the election, when the 10-year got to 0.94. And then somebody came in and did an awful lot of buying and drove it back down to 0.77. We had a Fed meeting yesterday ending. We had Powell giving his news conference. And I just want to ban any one of those people who asked him questions. Remember again going there. What a snore fest when they could have asked him something real. Anyway, the Bund minus 0.63. Again, continuing to go lower. So anybody who thinks Europe's coming out of this, quote, recession, where the hell they're in. The Bund is sure not telling you that. Japan only positive 0.01 now. They were up to positive 0.04. Oil down $1.25, 37.54. Rent down 1.14, 39.79. Natural gas up 2 cents, but still under $3 now, 2.96. It was down yesterday. About down 2 cents to 1.08, heading toward a dollar, which is pretty interesting. Gold up another 6.20, 19.53. Big rally in these things yesterday. The gold stock. Silver up 65 cents, 25.84. I did not get long in there. I'm kicking myself. Copper up 4 cents, 3.15. So some of your stocks like Freeport-McMoRan, which is used to be a pure copper play and was the equity copper play, and then they bought a gold company, so it's been a little murky. So I haven't been mentioning the name because it's not a pure copper play anymore. Anyway, they've been rallying for the last few weeks. We had something in there and made a buck, and now it's up more than that, so I guess I should have hung on to that one. Very difficult to play. Very difficult to figure out how far this stuff is going, man. It's back and forth, back and forth. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We already have a couple of issues here on a Friday morning. The Dan Ryan outbound local lanes, just before 59th Street, there's a significant crash, Chief, involving four cars and a semi. And that has the two right lanes blocked on the outbound local lanes of the Dan Ryan just before 59th Street. So downtown to 95th is up to 15 minutes and growing because of that crash on the local lane. So keep that in mind. No issues on the inbound side at this hour. I-57 and the Bishop Ford are all quiet. Same for the Stevenson and Eisenhower. Kennedy is looking good, but we had an issue right off the Edens on Dempster up north. It looks like we had a Dempster blocked between Lockwood Avenue and Central Avenue, and it's closed the Edens exit onto Dempster because of a semi with a ruptured fuel tank that happened due to a crash on Dempster right off the Edens Expressway. So that's you won't be able to get off on Dempster on the northbound Edens, so keep that in mind. It's not affecting Edens traffic, however. Inbound and outbound Edens looking okay. Out in the suburbs, we have a crash on Roosevelt Road, looks like at Highland Avenue. And then southwest of there, Book Road at 75th Street, there is a crash. But everything else quiet out there. Weather today, another absolutely gorgeous November day here in Chicago. Sunshine, a high of 71. Right now it's clear and 52 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, overcast skies today, warm temps, a high of 94. Right now it's partly cloudy and 73. In sports, as we touched on briefly with Lou yesterday, the NBA is close to declaring their start date of December 22nd. The NBPA accepted the plan, and now it'll go to the union vote, but it's expected to pass. It'll be a 72-game season, so they're going to knock 10 games off the season and start on December 22nd, right before Christmas. So not a long break for some of those teams that went deep in the playoffs. Lastly, Thursday Night Football, it was Green Bay and the Aaron Rodgers all over the banged-up 49ers, 34-17. Chief.
Did you watch any of that?
Of the Packer game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it. I watched, like, the third quarter. It was already kind of out of reach at that point.
Did you hear any of the guys talking earlier that the 49ers went to a they went to the conference finals last year, right?
That's right. They went to the Super Bowl last year. They beat the crap out of the Packers in the NFC title game.
That's right. Well, they said that not one of, I thought it was last year, they said not one guy last night between COVID and other stuff, not one guy in offense was a starter from the team in the Super Bowl or the national championship game last year.
It's crazy. They were without their quarterback, their star tight end, Kittle, their top two wide receivers, most of their offensive line, and then on the defensive side, Bosa is out for the year, their best defensive player, and then they're missing a couple other guys too, just like every team is. But they've been just absolutely killed by the injury bug, and yet they were only, I think, 7.5-point underdogs last night to Green Bay. So a lot of people were like, what does Vegas know that we don't know? And then, sure enough, Green Bay just beat the crap out of them like you would expect. So that line was really weird. But
well,
yeah.
And they're in a position where they could say, well, let's just try and regroup and be ready for the playoffs, except that their problem is, are they going to make the playoffs because of this? They could have their team back in time and be one of the best teams in football and not make the playoffs because of this stretch. And that's the NFL, actually. It always is a war of attrition to some degree.
That's exactly right. And they're now 4-5. They've dropped two in a row because they've been so banged up. And in that division, they're in last place. There's three teams ahead of them in that division. And so, yeah, if they don't get their guys back soon, they may be, you know, feeling great week 13, but they may already be out of it.
Well, it's going to be interesting.
Yet they won't be the team anybody who's a contender wants to play at that point.
Right, right.
Well, I don't want to dig into this too much. We'll probably do this more next week as it continues to unfold. But from a lot of experience that's close to home here in town, this COVID situation is changing dramatically. Anybody who's talked to a doctor in the fray for the last week to 10 days is now, and they don't know why, has seen a remarkable increase in the amount of positive tests. And the other phenomenon is the people that are, most of them that are testing positive, have no symptoms or very, very little symptoms. So something is changing dramatically, which you're seeing in all these state numbers and national numbers. And as of now, the
well,
theory is out.
Well, I think there's a lot to the increase in number of tests too, because I am. Let me go over to that tab. If I look at the state of Indiana, and especially the local area where everybody's freaking out here, and look at the some of the data, the number of increased positives is tracking exactly with the number of tests increasing. They're testing without symptoms, it's because they were those same people would have tested positive, 3 months ago, but they didn't go get tests because they didn't have symptoms.
So
I think that's a big part of it, And then, of course, everybody's freaking out over, you know, the load on the hospitals. Are we going to overload the hospitals? And, if I get a second here to get logged on, because it's on my laptop, not my desktop, the ICU and capacities and so on are still pretty good.
Well, if somebody's closer to this than it would like to be, doctor I talked to mentioned that it's all happened in like the last 2 weeks, because nothing happens that fast. And they were, one of the things they were questioning is there's a cold going around, and he explained to me there's a whole bunch of different kinds of colds, a couple of which are COVID. And if somebody's tests now are so sensitive that it's possible if it's a COVID cold, it could be tripping the tests. Because nothing goes that fast in 2 weeks. It's been here for a whole year.
Locally, the run-up started, it looks like September 10th, September 11th, thereabouts, in the area, and it tracks completely with the increase in testing, too. Our area, we have a university that's testing, students nonstop. So, you keep testing them. One of the things we don't know is how many test positive and then test positive again a week later, and are we reporting that as one?
Yeah, we count it twice. I mean, anyway.
But then I look at deaths by day, no increase. I look at the positivity rate, slight increase. I look at the ICU bed usage.
I'd say 34%
capacity available, and ventilators available is 83%.
I guess what I'm saying is every area is sort of different. The person I talked to was in the north suburbs of Chicago, and they got their spike in the last 7 to 10 days. And the thing that the phenomenon is, the people aren't sick. And so they're obviously looking to see what's going on, because if it was in April and you had that many positives, you'd had real problems. And now they don't, like, which is what you're talking about.
What I'm saying, Tom, is my guess is, my hypothesis on this that needs to be proven, is that you are getting people who are being tested now that weren't being tested because they didn't have symptoms. Now they're being tested with or without symptoms, and they're coming up positive. Done that, go back a little bit farther and done the same thing, you would have had the positives increasing, back when you started doing it that way.
I'm going to say,
getting tested without symptoms? Part of that is contact tracing, and part of that is that a lot of workplaces now, as people are getting back to work, are requiring tests on a regular basis. So whether you have symptoms or not, you're getting tested.
I'm going to say that at the end of the day, when this is all written, like many viruses before it, the virus is adapted to be more contagious and less deadly, which is an article that I got from a doctor in Italy in May. So it's not new. I think that's clearly what's happening. Now, I'm no doctor, but everything I read seems to point to that, which is a good thing, by the way. Maybe not the more contagious part, but if we'd had this many positive people, I mean, the numbers don't lie. I mean, in Britain, of course, their testing capability weren't so hot in April, but they had 122,000 positive cases. They had 22,000 deaths. Last month, they had something like 110,000 cases, and they had 2,000 deaths. So you can't tell me, even though the treatment's gotten better, that it's gotten that much better. That it's a 90% decrease in deaths. Something's changed. And I'm not a molecular biologist, so I can't tell you what. But the number, I go by the numbers. Something's changed. Anyway, did you happen to? I hope you didn't. I hope you were teaching or something, and you didn't listen to Paul Powell yesterday. And hey, what's his name? Not Paul Powell. Paul Powell was
yeah. I was gonna say Paul Powell's dead.
Yeah, he's dead, and he was the guy with the money in the shoeboxes.
Shoeboxes,
with money. I wish I could find one of those shoeboxes with all the cash. He used to take them with him when he went to a hotel.
His name is Jerome Powell.
Jerome Powell. I'm going to get it. The name Paul, somehow the idea of cash flashed before my mind, and I out-peeped the Paul Powell. The guy was found, dead in a motel room in Springfield? He had his shoeboxes with him?
Well, you need to, you got to carry cash. It's it's important to stay out of trouble. But yeah, the he was Secretary of State for those who don't remember. And what was interesting was that the way I remember it, when you got like your driver's license or something like that, you actually didn't write it to the state of Illinois or the Illinois Secretary of State. It actually you'd write your checks to Paul Powell, Secretary of State.
Yeah. Well, it's that was BW before Webby. Yeah, that was before Webby. Anyway, I listened to these soft sell questions to the Mr. Powell yesterday, and his they're doing this. They have all these tools. You know, I'm sorry. He's got one friggin' tool. He prints money. That's his tool. And this whole kind of, I mean, if I was I tell you what, we got two guys that are neck and neck for president. But if it was me, the first day I'm in there, I'm walking into the next Fed meeting, I'm sitting down and say, here's what you guys are doing. Here, it's outside the law, and I want you to tell me who you tell before you do what you're doing. Because I don't mind somebody making a little commission along the way. I mean, obviously, that's the business I'm in. But the idea that every single time you make a move, and now you make a move every single day, the same people get to front run the damn thing. The same people. You look at how much money that J.P. Morgan and Goldman said they made last quarter in trading bonds, which means trading the Fed's crap. I said, I want to know who you call. And I want everybody's resignation before I leave this room. Would I be like, was he just died, what's his name? The manager in The Natural. When he was in, when I leave this room, somebody's ass is going to be, somebody's ass is going to be in this briefcase. I mean, these people are oblivious to what they're doing. They're just buying assets without any report to anybody. It doesn't appear, at least that I can find, on who they bought, who they told before they were going to buy, what they're buying, and what's he going to do when this stuff runs off, Kevin? The Asian guy who said no man can do one thing. When you go out and you take that kind of money and you pump it into the system and you prop it up, You better be friggin' right that you're getting a dollar's worth of stimulus for every dollar you put in. Because someday, somewhere, it's coming out. And when it comes out, just I mean, I'm not going to be long with this because it's too early in the morning for when they went out and bought the mortgages, on day one, I said, okay, how does this work? They're going to go out and they're going to buy mortgages from these banks, all right, and they're going to take them in, and the money goes to the bank and the mortgages go there. So you have a dramatic amount of cash now that it's on these bank sheets that used to be an asset called a mortgage, and now it's cash, all right? So that's one thing. You pump, say, a small number, $10 billion into the system. Okay, it's in the system. Now, the system should react to that, certainly either with real growth, which is problematic, or with inflationary growth, one or the other, right? Because the one economic reality is that the amount of goods and services times the price index equals the amount of money in the system times the amount of times it spins, right? The velocity. That you can't change that. I don't think. I mean, Trump can't, Biden can't, whoever the hell they are. What's his name? Powell can't. So you can't change that. So what happens when it comes out? So I just bought. So normally, if you write your mortgage check, Manny, it goes to the bank. Okay, the bank pays out interest to people in normal times, and all that stuff is a big circle. All right, and they get their income back, and everything works properly. Now, if they go out and they put that money into the system, the next time you pay your mortgage, your check is not going to the bank; it's going to the Fed. And it's coming out of the system. So you've increased the money supply dramatically on day one. And every day after that, it's going to drain out on its own. Unless the Fed continues to go out and buy new shit, which basically is what they've been doing for years now, which is what is appalling to me, because you got to keep up with it. So one day somewhere, and they did this in the last part of 18, when Powell first came in, he said, we're going to stop buying new stuff for a while. Well, just that draining out, what do you think caused the drop in the stock market in the last quarter of 18. They said, we can't just let this run off because it's like we decrease the money supply every single day because we primed the pump so much Anyway, I don't want to get into this too much, but Kevin, you understand what I'm talking about? The idea that
I guess we're talking about we're a bunch of dumbasses. It's the easiest.
Someday, how are these guys going to take this $7 trillion budget and stuff they've bought or balance sheet if they just stop buying crap? How in God's name, if that thing drains down to 6 or 5, and all of a sudden all these checks that people write to their mortgages and everything else just go into a dead hole. You just go to the Fed, and it's just gone. The money, it appeared out of nowhere. It's going to go back into nowhere. How does any unless you have the most incredible economy going, how does the economy absorb that? So my point is they never got the bang for the buck they needed to prime the pump. The thing about priming the pump is that's what you do. You prime the pump. You don't flood the carburetor, right? They flooded the carburetor, and now all of a sudden, how the hell are they going to pull this out ever or let it drain out without having some? I mean, look at the last $2 or $3 trillion.
It's going to take a very, very long time if it's done well, and it's done right and it's done well.
Is there anybody who is a
potential president today who is capable of guiding us through that process successfully?
Well, here's my problem, and what I have. If you went out and bought all 10-year bonds or 30-year bonds, well, 10 years a note technically, you would, if you bought all that, at least you know you got the thing for 10 years, you got the thing for 30 years. Right, so you can somewhat control the runoff. If you go out and buy mortgages and another kind of crap, or corporate bonds, or callable preferreds or something, you have no idea when you're going to get the money flung back at you. You can't control the runoff. That's why you're constantly forced to go out and buy more stuff, which, you know, again, gets you back into the loop.
What you're saying is potentially the right idea, wrong choices, wrong execution. Potentially right idea.
Right, but when you start buying things that you can't control the runoff, so all of a sudden you're getting it. But then every time, if you're on a daily basis, I'm curious. First thing I would ask the guy who's the New York head of the New York Fed, which actually does this stuff. Actually, Chicago does a lot of this now too. I want to know how exactly do you, if you want to go out and buy $2 billion of some corporate bonds or some mortgages, how exactly do you do it? Who do you call? I really want to know the process, Kevin. Well, I call my buddy at Goldman like I do every day, or at Chase. Well, then what does he do? Well, he goes out and accumulates it for me, Reed front runs it, goes out and buys it, he turns around and sells it to me. You do this every day, the same people? What do you pay commission? What do you do? I would be grilling these guys on the process, and I guarantee you if I got straight answers, I would be appalled. And everybody's ass in that room would be in my briefcase. Is that too harsh?
No, it's about right. Hey, just to shift gears, because there's only a couple minutes left.
Yeah, please do.
A fun story out of Michigan?
Yeah.
A fun story out of Michigan. The Antrim County in Michigan, about 16,000 votes, had a little bit of a software, their voting software had a little bit of a bug. It flipped the Democrats and the Republicans. It flipped their votes in the opposite columns. Now, 16,000 votes isn't going to swing the election. Then you find out that there are 32 other counties. So the Antrim County is using a manual recount now. They're in the middle of a manual recount.
Is this Trump land or Biden land?
It's Trump land. It's overwhelmingly Trump land. Well, it turns out there's 32 other counties using the same software.
With the same problem or the same glitch?
Don't know yet. Not reported. They have to look into it now.
Oh, God.
But, this kind of came up because everybody... when they reported the results, everybody who lives there said, "Wait, you're kidding? No, that's not true. You better check this out. This isn't correct."
Well, now that you brought up the subject, back in the day, this is what we did to make money in our day for our dorm, right? I had the big car, the Oldsmobile, so I had about 7 people in the car piled out. We went from precinct to precinct, and as soon as the polls closed, we had an 800 number to call. I think we reversed the charges, didn't we, Kevin?
I
pulled the machines out.
I don't even have 800 numbers then.
I had 800 numbers. I think we reversed the charges. So they look at the back of the machine with the polling totals was on the back of the machine, 50 for Webby, 40 for Thomas, and we called those numbers in to whoever this is. That's how you report it. So it wasn't exactly any software. We got paid, what did we get paid, $5 a precinct or something? Kevin, I remember hustling all over the place, and we ended up getting like 50 precincts, so we made like $250 for the dorm thing, and then we ended up having a few beers with, let's say $15 of the dollars or 20 made it to the bar, the rest made it back to the dorm. Hey, how could that happen? Now when we get on the block, Maddie, we put the thing in that machine, does that thing all already report it somewhere, or does it hang there till the end of the day and report it at once? It goes into this, like, scanner, Kevin. Is the scanner hooked into a central spot?
I suspect that the scanner is offline, that it's not real-time updating any place other than maybe within the building. Maybe they're all attached to, you know, if they have a couple of scanners, maybe they're attached to a server, but...
Our place has one scanner.
They are offline, and those things get uploaded separately. That's what I think, but I don't know that. What I will say is just a summary comment in the last minute here, and I was telling you about this last night. We are so underutilizing technology to make this process faster and more efficient and more accurate. Now, in the case of the Antrim County bug, did it not occur to somebody to test the software before Election Day? That should be standard checklist items. This is, you know, everybody in the business world understands this. But in addition to that, the idea that we have to match the signature on the envelope, the signature on the ballot, and any signature that may be on file to process a mail-in ballot, and so it's taking forever. There is no reason, banks have been using signature matching technology since the 1990s. There is no reason that we couldn't be doing that and making this a streamlined process. And
well,
there are
a lot
of people who are advocating doing online voting with blockchain because it's a more secure software, and we'll see if that goes anywhere. I'm not on board with that yet. I want to see what they mean.
We're running over here, but I got a quick question. When I went down the block yesterday, or Tuesday, of course, I caused some problems by telling my name was Tom Howell. Evidently, 25 years ago when I first went down there, I told them I was Thomas, so they made me show the driver's license that they'd say that I'm really Thomas, and oh, by the way, my signature now, I'm gotten lazy, I just use Tom. And now they checked my signature against the driver's license. Now, but really, the signature they have on file is the one from 20-some years ago. So when people...
Which may
people
have changed over time.
Oh, yeah. Well, so when people go to... use a mail-in ballot, and you say they check the signature, they check it against, the signature in whatever precinct I was in, the last precinct I was in, or do they check it against my current driver's license?
Yeah, and I don't know what to tell you, because when I went in and they gave me the early voting ballot, I know they needed my driver's license, and they checked the voter rolls, but I don't know if they checked the signature that I used to register to vote. Because I just didn't pay close enough attention to what she was doing. But regardless, this stuff is all can be digitized if it isn't. There's no reason not to do it because it's important. Now, all signature verification software does is it says yes, this is a match, or no, you need to follow up on it. You don't necessarily have to kick it out unless it's saying Matt Weber and your vote supposedly for Tom Howe. So if you have something like that, that's an obvious mismatch. But for the most part, all it's doing is saying, here, these are the one-offs, these are the ones you have to deal with.
Well, Kevin, we got a dash, but I'll give you a quick story. My stepfather was vice president of finance for Waltham Watch, right? So unfortunately, one day he has a stroke, and he was a lefty, and it affected his left side, which came back, pretty much with a lot of work. But he started signing with his right hand. He had crummy penmanship to start with. The signature bore no resemblance to the one before the stroke. And the guy signed...
So what you'd do there is you'd kick it out, and then you'd ask him to come in and sign.
I'm going to say that he signed for the next 10 years. He worked another 10 years. He signed payroll checks. He signed checks for people to buy stuff from Europe that was in the $1 million range. He signed everything at the bank. He signed everything. He never once got questioned. And I'm going to say it didn't even...
I can tell you how signature verification works in banks.
All right, because, they didn't question him at all. Anyway, Kevin, thank you very much, bud. Good stuff. We'll be right back. Let me see what the market's doing. We're still down 25, I think. We'll be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger, as we are every Labor Friday, lost in this whole message. Labor Friday. Be right back.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something.
Phone North Bank's Back to Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures out on 31. That's not even really half. Get close to halfway back from yesterday. NASDAQ Futures down 129. Dow Futures down 208. And none of them are quite back to halfway. Do we have Mr. Carl?
You do.
Hey, I was just thinking here that if we go down a little bit further, it might be a Fibonacci replacement. And I was thinking about how if I were to throw the picture that you send out with all your stuff, I would put like a longer hair and a big beard on there. That might be kind of a Fibonacci look. You could go with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's boy, it's been an interesting ride the last few days, both from a market point of view and of course, you know, driven by the election shenanigans. So,
well, you're somewhat of a man who's got his finger on the pulse of the world. Who do you think the person was the other night that? It sent the 10-year rate from 94 down to 77 and spun the spools 150 points. Was that the Treasury or the Fed?
You know, I don't know. But it's one of the things that I think is fascinating with what's happening from a standpoint of the market reaction to this is that when you look at what appears to have occurred here with the election is that Trump was hated enough that this was close enough that if there is fraud, it was able to be, you know, be able to be worked and the election stolen, which, by the way, only works if it's really close. Okay, you look at what happened in McMinn County in Tennessee right after World War II for what happens when it isn't and you try to do that.
Yeah.
The guns come out. Right? So, I mean, the only way that anybody ever steals elections is, you know, when you're within a fraction of a percent, right? Because it's just impossible to do it and get away with it if there's really a, you know, a sizable margin. So that's an indictment all by itself. You don't even have to get to, you know, is it happening? The fact that you have something that's that close in so many places is by itself a problem. But the other thing that's interesting, and the warning to the Democrats, which at present people are being real quiet about, but this is going to start being talked about, and it's why the market is so up so much. The Democrats lost House seats, and they did not get the Senate. Okay.
Well, they might have got the Senate.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen. Okay. So
I'm agreeing with you. They did not get the wave they're talking about. But who knows what's going to happen with these two seats in Georgia?
Well, there's a potential. The thing is, I mean, you know, a 50-50 tie, of course, is a majority, right? Because the vice president votes, votes for the on that side. I don't think that you're going to see the Senate flip, and the fact that you lost House seats on the Democrat side is a very clear warning that if you try to overplay your hand, you're begging for really serious trouble.
Well, I mentioned earlier when the show first came on that I hope Biden would, if he squeaks in here, which it looks like he might, won't be as dumb as Trump and come out and say he's got a mandate.
Well, yeah, there's clearly not. The thing is, divided government tends to be good for the stock market, okay? Because the crazy can't happen on either side, and that tends to be good for equities generally.
Well.
So, I've had people say, well, you know, why is the market up so much if Biden's going to win and he's saying he's going to raise taxes? Well, he's not going to be able to get away with it if he doesn't have the Senate.
don't go crazy Kramer on me here, please, because the idea that you can go back with some, I'm not saying you're doing this. I read the other day, I read it out for everybody, I don't know what I did with it. Somebody went back and charted, Democratic presidents with split Congress, Democratic presidents with all Democrats, but those are statistics that, that say, within 20 minutes of Maddie Webber leaving the can in the morning, 15 accidents occur on the Dan Ryan. I mean,
right.
There's no, what does Kevin say? It's correlation without causation. I think that you're a slave of your times to a certain extent. I mean, Bush, once 9/11 happened, I mean, he didn't have the stones or the mentality to go on with his agenda, whatever it was. His whole presidency got co-opted, essentially. I mean, I think who's ever in this spot, I just mentioned earlier, that if it's you, if it's me, if it's Kevin, whatever our political affiliations, I mean, and we can always get money to our people, which is really the job of these guys, the people who give them money. I mean, I think Biden, because he got so much money from these dot-bomb places, the high-tech people, there's not going to be any antitrust. That kind of stuff you and I can predict. But by and large, it's like Powell yesterday talking. They're broke. There's nothing. Who's ever you put there, you could put Attila Hunter or Solomon in the same spot. They're so overcome by, as Curly used to say, they're victims of circumstance. Circumstance they're in are so dire in a lot of areas. I mean, I don't know how they can almost operate here. I mean, the thing I sent you last night, I know that's probably the most sour-sounding thing I've read all year. You know, the one about the transfer of wealth.
Right.
They're talking. I mean, I don't know if I suspected something like that was going on. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, which is usually the case, there's been this predicted $68 trillion transfer of wealth in America between one generation to the next.
The thing is, though, is that so much of this has been sucked up by a handful of people,
right?
And that's where a lot of the polarization comes from. But you have all these people that are like, screaming about this whole everything that's been going on with COVID, and I say, well, if you're all that bent out of shape about this, why do you think it's so wonderful that Jeff Bezos has essentially pocketed $3 or $4 billion?
Yeah.
Okay. On the backs of the misery of everybody else in the country.
Well, here's the key point to this article. And again, when you read this stuff, you assume, well, you hope that the person did some kind of research. The lady's name is Ellen Sheng, and she looks honest. She got a picture. It says, according to a survey by the Center for the New Middle Class, whichever the hell that is, there's a 25% drop in the number of baby boomers who said they are self-employed or own their own business in the second quarter of this year. This
yeah.
is what we've been talking on. Carl, you've been trumpeting this. I've been trumpeting this. There hasn't been a person on this show that hasn't, to some degree or another, alluded to the fact that, hey, the market, which is all these days, Amazon, Google, and the rest of these things, is going up, and yet every single day we're pulling legs out of the stool of this country, and one of these days they're going to come together. And I mean, when that day may not ever happen in the stock market, because it could be just dominated by 50. There could be 50 stocks left. But the fact is, it's going to be felt by other people. It says here, the economy at large, I'll read the whole thing. The impact could have significant repercussions for the economy at large, considering that baby boomers own nearly half of privately held businesses with employees in the U.S., according to Project Equity, whatever that is. That's 2.34 million businesses with 24.7 million employees and $5.1 trillion in sales. And they're saying in one quarter, that dropped by 25%.
Yeah, and it's stunning.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, and this is the thing that I've pointed out all the way through. When this whole thing started, and people, you know, 15 days to slow the spread, and then, of course, you know, that was a lie, and it ended up with a month and a half. And I said, look, I don't care how you feel about the, you know, the scale and the, you know, the math on whether or not we're going to have a few people who die or a lot of people that die. I said, the problem is, what do you pay for the public health resources with? And the answer is tax receipts. Okay?
Right.
And so if you destroy all of these businesses, whether you like it or not, the money isn't going to be there. And then what are you going to do? Well, the answer, of course, is always the Fed will print some more and the government will borrow some more and we'll just spend it even though we don't have it and yada, yada, yada. And that's all fine right up until you realize that all those people who really aren't employed anymore, they really aren't employed anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it's that simple when you get down to the end of it. And I look at almost everything fundamentally, because it's what I've done my entire life, is a math problem. It's a data analysis issue, okay?
Sure.
And I look at what happened with COVID and what we knew about it very early on, that old people were much more likely to be killed by this thing than young people. It has a distribution that is much worse than chicken pox, which your mother probably deliberately infected you if you didn't get it naturally. My mother deliberately infected me. I remember it. And the reason was that there, not only might I get it later, at which point I might be badly screwed, but one of my aunts or uncles or somebody else probably didn't have it when they were a kid. And if they got it, they would be screwed. And so as a result, we took this public health position, because there was no vaccine, that, hey, you know what? Guess what? You're 9 years old, you haven't had it yet, and it's summer, which means you won't be disrupting your, you know, going to school for a week. The kid across the street has it. Go play with him.
Well, I mean, the mumps wasn't as bad, but it was somewhat the same way. You wanted your males, children, to get the mumps when they were 12, because if they got it when they were 20, there was a chance they were firing blanks the rest of their life, right?
Exactly. And so, you know, there was this, but we have dealt with diseases like this before. And so what did we do? We now say, if you're a college student, this thing is extremely unlikely to do anything terrible to you, but let's shut down all the keggers. Let's shut down the schools. Let's shut down the regular schools in March, April, May. We closed the entire country's public school system. What we should have done is put all the desks together and had every class have a group hug at the end. Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean,
because,
I think that we have there's other stuff going down here, and this is the part that there's no way I can fix, you can fix, but there's a split. I mean, as I rail on politicians, it's you can say what you want about Richard J. Daley, I was a reasonable friend of his son's, but his son was not the dad. But he, you know, he was a guy that when he was mayor, he grew up in Bridgeport, for God's sake. I mean, he knew what the bartender did. He knew the relationship between all these places in the city. If you don't get the tax money, you can't run the city. But now there's this, somehow there's this ruling class that doesn't feel they're part of, that they're going to get their paycheck no matter what. And they don't seem to realize that other people are paying for it. Well, you just said they don't have any clue of. But the idea that if you bury 25% of your independent businesses, the tax receipts in the city are down 25%, and you're not going to freaking get paid. There is no connection between Lori Lightfoot, maybe she a little bit, Tony Preckwinkle, Jay Pritzker, and the average working stiff in the city. It isn't on the government dole. I mean, that's my biggest complaint on this whole mess. And you see it all the way up the chain, on the federal level, everywhere. And I don't. Matter of fact, I mean, I'll say this: if you go around the suburbs, which I haven't, but I have we have our cub reporters, right, Manny? People call me up and they say all these bars and restaurants are supposed to be closed. The suburbs, half of them are open. They're saying, "Screw you, we're open." And whether you got to do the double secret knock to get in, I don't know. Now, but what does that mean? What that means is that the people. The reason why people obey the law, I think, even your parents to a certain extent, even though they're able to crack you upside the head, the rules have to be reasonable. Even if you're 8 or 9, you sort of realize they're reasonable. You can't smack your brother. I mean, this is stuff that you should already know, right? And those kinds of things. Well, I think, and Maddie may tell me I'm nuts because he does all the time, I think there's a correlation between the people opening restaurants against the, quote, rules, and the three people we see every morning going through the red lights as we go into work, which we never used to. I think there's a total degradation that these people have any idea what they're doing and the rules they're making make any sense, and I'm not going to obey any of them.
Yeah, no, I do. And the thing is, though, right now I'm down in Florida. I'm visiting my daughter. She lives down here. And I went into some of the old haunts that I used to hang out at last night and, you know, had a few beers and things like this. And the places are still there, but a significant number of the staff are not.
Right.
Okay. Now, DeSantis basically said all of you different municipalities and all you people, you know, you can all go blankety-blank yourself. All the mandates are unenforceable. Have a nice day. And that day, everything reopened at full capacity. Okay, all the bars, all the restaurants. There are no mask mandates. They put all the signs up they want, but they can't do anything about it. And the thing is one of these places very busy, but you got one bartender behind the bar taking care of the entire place. There used to be three people working there. All right, that same night. And the reason that there isn't is because they couldn't, you know, during this period of time, they couldn't make any money, and therefore there was no money to keep these people on staff.
Right.
And so, you know, so, I mean, hey, for the person who managed to get through it and still has a job, you know, she's doing okay because, guess what, she gets all the tips now instead of having to split them three ways. But the thing is, how about the other two?
Now, what is the? I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the Illinois stuff. Although you were here and you own a company here,
yeah.
If somebody lays somebody off for 2 weeks. What is their unemployment situation? I don't even know. Do you just go ahead and file, and then as if it's going to be forever, and then?
Yeah, that is what happens. But the other thing that in Illinois, you know, in theory. If you get quote unquote laid off because you got fired for because you didn't come into work, you're not supposed to be able to get unemployment. But I will tell you
that means the company, just to go through the routine, the company has to challenge that, correct?
Oh no, you know what? But I used to challenge those all the time because you know they were legitimate challenges. We lost every one of them.
Now, we actually won one.
Yeah, we lost them all the time. I had people that got canned because they didn't show up for work. They got fired. They'd go file unemployment. And I'm like, And we challenged that, and the state would give it to them anyway.
Well, when we moved, we had a bigger office, and a lady was working for us. She had her own private office. We moved to a space where nobody had a private office, and she refused to come over for that. And claimed unemployment. We said, "Hey, we never got rid of her. She just never showed up at the new place."
And, yeah, she walked out. Yeah,
she walked out, and we ended up winning. I mean, that was the weirdest thing, but that was a long time ago. But explain to me, or to everybody, not just me, if PTI, for instance, or Carl Inc., if all of a sudden you lose 10 people in unemployment, in normal times, doesn't your contribution to unemployment go up because you're the ones that where you're losing people? It's like a fine if you lose people, and if you never lose anybody, you pay a less amount, correct?
Up to a point. So the way it works is that as you have claims against you, the tax rate that is assessed against your salaries, basically, that you pay, goes up, but it caps off relatively quickly.
Okay.
So at the point that it caps off, there is no disincentive for you to can people anymore.
All right. That's sort of odd, but...
Well, that's how it works.
It's not draconian, where if you have 100 people and every year you lay off 10 people and they go on unemployment, it's not like it's going to cost you like $100,000 a month or anything.
No. Although the penalty accelerates relatively quickly, but it caps off relatively quickly too. So I mean, we very quickly got to the point that I'm like, well, I really don't care if I have a reason to fire you, you're getting fired, because guess what? There's no additional cost to me at this point.
Carl, you get back at we got a few minutes here, and then we're gonna go to break. Come back for the numbers. What we were just talking about is part of. I mean, I'm accusing the politicians and all the people of just plain not caring. That might be a little harsh, or not knowing, which is even worse. But where I'm going with this is part of it. I mean, I've mentioned on you can name the place. When you have an economy that's going really good, right? You're, there's a group in Washington that probably you know the name of, whose job is to try and figure out how many businesses are being formed or falling apart, and adding
that's the people in the BLS that supposedly do that.
Okay, so what I'm asking is, when we talk about 24% of these businesses, according to this thing, going under, in good times, I think they always underestimate. In other words, if you're all of a sudden things are going great and we're building houses and stuff. And the Carl Chief Maddie housing thing, all of a sudden, instead of building two houses a year, we start building four or five, and we hire another electrician, another plumber, blah, blah, blah. And if these guys are contract people, nobody's really going to know we hired them till the end of the year, right? Till we send in the 1099. And I guess, so there's always this. So my thought has always been that when things are going good, they're actually going better than you think they are. And when things are going crappy, they're always going crappier than you think they are, because, I mean, if we wanted to, other than this lady writing this article here about the... Could the government, if they cared enough, could they even keep track of 24% of these businesses going under? I mean, how would they, other than somebody really digging into it, how would they even know?
They don't for the most part, and the reason that I don't even bother with the adjusted numbers is exactly that. Okay, that the BLS is always behind on in both directions, and so you say, well, that all evens out over time. Well, maybe it does, but I'm interested in what's happening today, and so I just look at annualized number, because Christmas happens the same time every year, right? So
yeah.
And that way I avoid most of the insanity. And I don't think that it's necessarily politically motivated to tilt things one way or another. It's just that the job, to get accurate numbers, the job really is hard. The most accurate is probably the payroll tax deposits, but that only applies to people who are working for someone else. If you're self-employed, then you're not going to show up there until the estimated comes
right
up, and you have to make that estimated payment, and that's every quarter.
A guy, for instance, when I bought my, it was interesting, we were talking about Cuban people earlier in Florida, when I bought my T-100, I bought it from this guy in Miami, right? So I fly down there, of course it's this Cuban guy, and he's the nicest guy, and I'm looking at him and I'm going, well, he's the world's nicest dude, but I just look at this guy and I'm going, I don't think anybody would want to mess with this guy. Just kind of a look I had, and I go, by the way, what do you, it turns out he's a software guy, and he had like a 2-year contract with Exxon or somebody. He goes, all my buddies, we do this stuff. We're contract people, but it's always for a project. The project is a year out, 2 years out, that kind of thing. So there's never any doubt about us being contract and not employees. I said, what do you do like in your spare time? Oh, I teach martial arts. I'm like an 8th-degree black belt. I can just tell by looking at the. Anyway, he's the world's nicest guy. And how does that guy get counted? Now he's sending all his own stuff in, and at the end of 2 years, if he never gets another job, he's not unemployed. He's just not counted, right?
Yeah, that essentially is, you know, what it comes down to.
Well, I mean the thing of what I mentioned earlier is Richard J. Daley, the original, is his car brought him to work. I mean, he knew enough to know when he drove by 3 or 4 places that are now boarded up, some bad crap was happening. I don't know that these other people that have been on the dole their whole life, I don't know if they even look out the window and see that and they have some kind of an idea. I mean, they don't talk like they do, Carl. I mean, the mayor of New York doesn't talk like he just pissed away half a quarter of the city, for God's sake.
Well, you know what? The mayor of New York no longer goes down to the corner pub, and whatever whatever terrible things you can say about the people who used to be in power, at least to some extent, they did mix with the rest of us proles.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say without really saying it. They somehow didn't lose contact with even the policeman that drove them in. How are things going? Not so good. My brother-in-law just lost his bar. Right.
Right.
I don't think these guys talk to anybody.
No, they don't. And that's just the way it works now.
Anyway, we've got to get the break. When we come back, we'll have all these labor numbers that you're going to edumacate us on, as my grandmother used to say. We'll be right back. S&P futures down 27.75. Dow futures down 189. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Investments will make you wealthy. Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They're located in Orland Park and can be reached at at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ellis, Mr. Mel Weber on the board. We have Mr. Carl Denninger with us on Labor Day. We've got 638,000 jobs added in October versus 530 expected, and we'll get more out of Carl. I think this also includes 150,000 census workers that we lost, allegedly, anyway. S&P futures still down 27, NASDAQ futures down 114, Dow futures down 178. In Europe, we've got DAX down 135, 1%, FTSE down 10, 0.2%, CAC run down 48, that's a 1%er. In Asia, Nikkei up 219, 0.9%, Shanghai down 8.2%, Hang Seng up 17, let's call that flat. Again, by way of yesterday, that was up 542, so we're not even close to that. S&P up 67, so we've given back maybe a third, a little more than a third here. NASDAQ up 300, so in a huge upside week. We may still be upside today, who knows, but as of right now, not so much. 10-year 0.79, that's up a little bit, it's up 1 basis point. Over in Europe, we got the Bund, minus 0.63. Cannot, being negative interest rates for that long, I can't even imagine that, to be honest with you, but they are there. Japan, positive 0.01. Oil down $1.13, $37.66. It looks pretty mired under $40 here now. You know, we talked to Dan Janitas yesterday, and he thinks some companies can make money here. And I don't know, from his lips to God's ear. A Brent down $109, $39.84. Natural gas down 3 cents, $2.91. Our bond heading towards a dollar, down 2 cents, $109. Gold, however, somewhat to the moon, 1956, the highest it's been in a while. It's a dollar, it's up 970. Silver is the one that's really been moving here. 61 cents, that's another 2.5%. 25.81, copper up 3 cents, 3.14. Anybody got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still working on that issue on Dempster up in the northern suburbs that's affecting the Dempster exit off the Edens. In fact, the Dempster Illinois 58 exit 37, it remains closed due to an earlier crash involving a tanker truck and a potential fuel leak. The exit ramp to Dempster is blocked, and it's on the westbound side just before Central. So that's not causing delays on the Edens itself, but that is a concern on a busy intersection there to get on or off the Edens with crews on the scene. Kennedy looks okay, as does the Eisenhower. Stevenson slow in the southwestern suburbs. No accidents to report, just high traffic volumes. But then as you get further inland, it actually clears up a little bit on the Stevenson. Southside expressways are all clear. That earlier crash on the outbound local lanes of the Ryan at 59th Street is all clear, so that's good news. Off the expressways, it looks like we have a crash out west, Cass Avenue at Ogden. There is an accident. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, another beautiful day. Sunshine, a high of 71. Right now it's crystal clear and 53 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, overcast skies today, but a high of 94. Right now it's partly cloudy and 74. In sports, Thursday night football last night, it was the Packers all over the banged up 49ers, 34-17. And as we touched on briefly, the NBA plans to start their season on December 22nd, pending a union vote. Which is expected to be accepted. It'll be an abbreviated 72-game season, starting just before Christmas. Chief?
Does everybody get to play, or are they booting the Bulls again?
This one won't be in a bubble. This will be everyone gets to play because the owners are dying to get back into their arenas and hopefully allow some fans at some point, but who knows?
What do you think that's going to happen? Well, Kevin was talking about next week they're having the big deal with the Notre Dame having with their season ticket holders, letting them know what the what their story is, whether they're going to stagger them or what they're going to do
for basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. It's obviously indoors versus outdoors, and they're much more reluctant to allow fans to an indoor event at this point still. So I don't see that changing, but we'll see.
Yeah. So, Carol, what do you think of these numbers, buddy?
Well, I'll tell you what. This is interesting. So the census layoff is in here. And we found that. It's about 147,000 that were terminated because their services are no longer required. But the tell you what, the internals on this are really interesting. The if you look at the month over month on the household survey, it was up 2.6 million, not 600,000. If you look at the number, the change in the unemployed number, it fell. Now that this is the 12 month change, okay. Remember we've kind of been tracking that. It was at 24 million at one point, 23.3, and now it's down to -8.6, and that is about 1.4 million improvement over last month. So these numbers are tracking fairly well. The other thing is 800,000 people came out of the non-labor force number.
Right. The table I'm using shows six, but yeah.
This is an interesting thing. And then the employment population ratio, which is that's the big number that I always pay the most attention to, because that's who's paying taxes, right? versus who's sucking on taxes. That's up by a full point. 10 ticks.
Yeah, do you... I'm looking at the adjusted numbers. I mean, do you believe them?
No, but I do believe the unadjusted numbers. And I mean, they are what they are. This is... Now, you know, the thing is, everything's a month in arrears, right? Because now, towards the end of October was when everyone started screaming about new lockdown orders and things like this. Now you got the governor of Connecticut threatening to shut down the state again, and you know, that's going on pretty much everywhere. You know, all the Northeast area anyway, and to some extent the Midwest. And then you have people that are just saying, you know what, I don't care what you order, we're not going to close, like you've got going on up in Illinois.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we'll see how that all plays out. There were lots of charges that this entire thing was being driven by politics, and of course it would all go, you know, it would all go away on November 3rd, which so far it hasn't. But you cannot argue with the data. It is what it is, and you know, it says that okay, people are being rehired, and even with the census firing, which should have had a very material negative impact, and it's in the data, it's there. But not enough to offset what looks like an extremely strong report.
I really can't poke any holes in it. I just it doesn't really match up with what I'm seeing. You know, certainly in the last couple of weeks here in Chicago.
Well, it doesn't match up with what I'm seeing on the ground. Okay, but on the other hand, what I'm seeing on the ground is today, and this was the second week of October. So it's almost a month in arrears at the point that you get it, you know, when you think about kind of how that works, because a survey week, you know, is what it is.
Dig deeper. Is there any place here? I think the answer is no, but I will ask. I mean, there was a. I'll go back to when I bought my Secret Service Suburban. I bought it in Grand Rapids, and Carl, you may disagree here. You're probably correct. If you want to find out what's going on in the hood economically, I mean, people, who would you talk to? I'll ask you, and I'll tell you why I would.
I think you'd have to go. You know, you'd have to go to the places that people hang out with when they're not working. And so you'd have to find, you know, where is that? That would be the, you know, the pubs and the hangouts and the, you know, the pool halls and things like this.
Well, I found a guy, the guy who ran this particular place that I bought my truck, was basically a used car lot.
Yeah.
To say that this guy had his finger on the pulse of that community is an understatement. I mean, usually you know how much I talk. I just basically said, by the way, what's going on around here? And I was driving down the street. I had been there before, and there was something wrong with it. He had to fix some stuff. So I had to drive back to Grand Rapids. But if I got knocked off the main drag because they were going to have this little concert, right? So I had to work my way down these streets where there were houses. And I,
right.
You know, I'm not a detective, but I'm reasonably observant. And I'm looking at these places, and I'm going, there's people living there. They obviously keep the grass cut. I mean, everything's clean. You look at the roof, and you say, gee, you know, that roof should have been replaced 2-3 years ago. I mean, obviously, it's not leaking, but it's getting there. And so you get the feeling that people are able to make ends meet on a day-to-day basis, but they're putting off, you know, any kind of long-term maintenance or whatever.
Yeah, there's deferred maintenance going on, yeah.
Yeah, so I sit down with this guy, and he says, I said, so what's the economy like in Grand Rapids? He said, well, it used to be a lot of, evidently, Pfizer is a big place up there, but he said, a lot of it was office furniture manufacturer, a lot of stuff. He said, all these people worked, a lot of them worked in places where they were making, you know, $35 an hour, and they've got these homes, and they're still paying their mortgages and everything. He goes, for a long period of time, everybody was laid off, you know, 2007, 2008, whatever, and now virtually everybody's got a job back, but instead of 35, it's 18 to 22. So they're still in their houses. They both husband and wife are working. And by the way, if it's 10 grand for a new roof, it gets put off, which is exactly kind of my observation. So when you see what happens here with people being laid off and now rushing back to work, really, like these numbers lead you to believe, I mean, what would we see if we were able to say average hourly compensation in February versus today, when you see Amazon hiring another 10,000 people for all the rice you can eat and those kinds of things? I mean, I don't know how you get those numbers, but if you had to guess, I mean, I read stuff years ago that after the 2000 and 2000, especially the 2000 fiasco, that the amount of people that were making 70 grand and were now making 40 in their new job was legendary. You know, how do you find that out real time currently, or can you?
Well, supposedly it's in the tables, okay? I mean, you know, if you believe their numbers, they say that, you know, in October average hourly earnings were up by 4 cents to $29.50, and production and non-supervisory was up by a nickel to $20.42. Whether or not I really believe all of this, I'm not so sure. I mean, ADP probably has more accurate data than the BLS does because they process the payroll for so many people. But the problem you have with all of those statistics is they don't capture what happens to the small business person and the independent guy at all. And so if his hourly earnings get cut in half, okay, that just doesn't show up in their data.
Well, say our girl AV, who used to work at Lagos, and now she's going to school and everything, so she doesn't have time to do that. But if she, for instance, and a few of her friends were, you know, they're wasting in these nice places. So if they're making, you know, pick a number, you know, $3,000 a month with tips and everything, or $2,500, and they go over to Amazon and get a job at $10 an hour, and the next month they get a 20-cent raise. The statistics is going to look like they're kicking ass, right? I mean, they just went from 10 to 10.25 or 10.20, but none of it reflects on where they came from, where they were actually
right.
Probably making 25. You know, so, I mean, you can lose a lot of people in this mess the way we're doing it.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, like, if you look at, like, the average hourly earnings annualized, okay, October to October, according to the BLS data, it went from $28.24 a year ago to $29.50 today. Okay, so, you know, it's a buck and a quarter, right? Roughly.
Yeah.
Is that reflective of reality? I don't know. Is it reflective of reality in the sample? Yeah, I'm sure it is. The question is how badly is the sample, you know, does the sample reflect anything realistic? It's very hard to get your hands around that. My suspicion is that with all the stuff that's going on with COVID, you've seen an acceleration of this where, okay, we got jobs back, but where are they? They're schlepping boxes at the Amazon warehouse.
Well, right. I mean, or delivering them, UPS or someplace.
Yeah, and some of those jobs pay okay, but what was the guy doing before that? Right. And that's the problem is, what, you know, if he was making 45 grand a year, now he's making 30, that's not so good.
No, and plus a lot of these places are pretty good at kicking you out at 35 hours so you're not full-time or whatever, and those kinds of things.
Exactly.
For instance, the Dunkin' Donuts that doesn't open early enough more in the morning for Maddie and I to order coffee anymore, which, big problem, Carl, big problem. But they when they raised the minimum wage in Chicago, of course, the bump who owns the place raises the price of coffee, and you say, gee, why'd you raise the price of coffee? Well, that's because of the minimum wage. Well,
right.
Until 2 days later on the QT, one of the young ladies says to me, you do realize that they raised our rate, now we're down to 7 hours a day.
Right.
It's not so busy. So, okay, he raised the price of coffee to cover it, then he bumps the girls an hour. You know, nice friggin' guy, right? But, you never really pick up that kind of shenanigans in these numbers, do you?
No, and that's, in theory, it should show up in the average hours worked. And the average hours worked is actually a better proxy for employment in many cases than the raw number is, because nobody hires someone else if they can avoid doing it without shoving people into overtime, right? Where they're going to have to pay time and a half or whatever have you. But Obamacare played with that to a large degree because you've got that 32-hour threshold for having to give your employees health insurance now. And so there was a lot of distortion that was thrown into those numbers. It used to be extremely reliable prior to Obamacare. Now it's a little less so for that reason.
Well, I'm going to say, just from what my people are telling me, that, you know, we don't have that many people at PTI. We got some when they take the public transportation in. And when this first happened, essentially the L was empty.
Right.
And one of the things that was kind of unbeknownst, that you almost had to pick up almost by accident if somebody didn't tell you, was one of the industries that's laid off. It laid off they didn't lay off as many people as the convention business or the hospitality business, but they were pretty much right on their heels, which you never would have expected, was hospitals. Because
right.
They got rid of every kind of elective surgery or any kind of elective. I mean, right now there's people walking around with items, you know, things that they should have gotten tested for or treated 6-8 months ago, probably more than in the last 20 years. Tests that people didn't have and whatever. How's this for a pun? The backup on colonoscopies is probably huge, right? but I'm saying that, you know, it seems like it's kind of funny, but now these guys are telling me that the rapid transit, the L's, are reasonably full, but everybody's getting off at the hospitals and not going all the way downtown. A few more people, because downtown's
right.
Somewhat of a wasteland. But I think the hospitals are reasonably back to full employment, and that was a big hole there for a while. So some
in the data it looks like it, yeah.
So some groups are making a pretty dramatic recovery back. Recovery back, that's double something. But you know what I'm saying? But I would say that in this area, October of any month is a tale of 2 months. And I think we just got numbers on the first half and not the second half.
Well, definitely, and the thing is that the Scream Fest with the COVID resurgence really started in the back half of October.
Right.
And so, you know, this next month or two is going to be interesting. And you know, normally, November is a very strong hiring month because you've got all of the temporary help being picked up for the holidays. Be interesting to see how that gets balanced out if we start to see more constraints being slammed down on people.
Are you relegating your? By the way, where are you having Thanksgiving? Are you heading back down to Florida? Or are you trying to get us to come to your place in Tennessee? Because otherwise, you'd be by yourself, or what?
I'm probably going to be up there, although I don't know. I mean, I'm still talking to my daughter and see what her and her boyfriend are planning on doing and things like that. So we're planning on doing Christmas up by me because she wants me to. So I'm like, okay.
Well, so now if you fly to Florida, it's a long way to go if your Thanksgiving is relegated to 2 hours vis-a-vis the California laws.
Well, I don't fly. From Tennessee down to here is only an 8-hour run in the car. I'd rather drive it.
You don't have the John Madden bus where somebody's driving you?
Well, you know, I could do that, I suppose, but no. I actually like road trips, so I don't have a problem hopping in the car and going somewhere. You know, the funny thing, though, is this year, because of all the stupidity, the amount of money that I've spent on travel and entertainment has gone down by, like, 95%.
Oh, me too. Me too.
I'd normally be all over the place all summer long and into the fall, catching the fall colors, chasing them with the camera, you know, and having a, you know, whooping it up and having a good time, spending a lot of money in bars and restaurants. Not so much this year.
Well, my American Express would be at least 2 days a week, series, and then a Tripoli tap, and I haven't been either one of those in 2 months, or I'm in a series.
Yeah.
When do they close? April? March? They close March. They're not reopened. I don't see how at some point. If you were in town, I'd love to just have you walk around downtown and give me your appraisal of what's going down with these downtown buildings. The flower guys are gone. The coffee guys are gone. The bars are gone. I mean, they're not officially quote gone because I think a lot of their lease was in a percentage of the gross. I mean, you know more about that
right.
than me. But I don't know what. I don't know what a place like Ceres or those kinds of places, oh, the building, if the building's 10% occupied and they say we just can't open, now whether, you know, they're paying, you know, $2,000 a month just to hang on to the spot or whatever, but I don't even know how that works, but I don't see how they could bring back, you know, 50 staff, because that's how big the kitchen and everything is there, just to service, you know, 100 people in a building. How do you do that?
Right.
What do you think? I don't know why I have this, because people tell me how efficient they are at home and so forth. But my buddies from the Federal Reserve I'm convinced, Carl. These are good friends of mine. I'm absolutely convinced I'll never see them again. I mean, never is a long time. People say, "Oh, Chief, you're over." You know what? I don't think I am exaggerating. One guy's pretty much moved to Wisconsin. The other guy has bought a house in Indiana. They're never planning on going back. Ever. I mean, these guys are 2-3 years away from retirement, and they're just saying, I'm going to work from home. I mean, we got this building. We spent millions of dollars in hardening for make sure no terrorist gets near the place. How does nobody go to work? I mean, and yet every time when they were here, I'd see them at lunch. I'd see them for a cocktail with people coming from out of town, people from other countries. There's this constant personal interplay. And that's what their job was, to help other exchanges around the world and do those kinds of things with their money transfers. And these guys are brilliant guys. How do you take all that off the table? Never see it. I mean, when that's like your job, to make sure that when money settles from the U.S. exchanges through the European exchanges, that it goes seamlessly. How do you stop all that interpersonal stuff and not even show up for work for 3 years and still do your friggin' job? I don't see how you can. I mean, people say, oh, no. I'm great. I'm on Zoom. I'm on this. To me, I'm just saying bull bleep. Am I wrong?
No, I don't think you are. I think that one of the things that's going to be kind of the defining moment for this is the permanent changes that are going to come and are already happening in not just the office market, but in other areas, you know, related to this when it comes to how do we do all of that, right? And what that does to the commercial real estate market over the next 5 or 10 years is, oh boy. And the thing is, this is the other problem that comes with that, is that the state and local governments, typically speaking, your commercial property is taxed at a much higher rate than residential.
Oh, got you.
So what happens when all of that, you know, if you collapse all of the office buildings and the retail and stuff in the bottom. You know, when I had my office in Peru, we had a nice little bar and grill down in on the ground floor. And
yeah,
that was, you know, I stopped down there and had a couple of drinks, and you know, about half the time I'd get lunch there because it was very convenient. It was right there. Well, that's all gone. And that's, you're talking about prime real estate, and the tax revenue that comes off that stuff has to be tremendous. Well, with all of that gone, how do you pay for all the things that people want?
Well, plus, anybody anybody I've had to contact at any company I deal with, when I'm calling the person at home, anybody who thinks it's the same, I got news for you. It's not. And all of a sudden you're talking to somebody and the dog starts barking. Or, I'll call you back. My kid needs help with his homework. I'm going, what? He's supposed to be at work, for God's sake. You know?
Yeah.
People could talk themselves into anything, but my next, we only have a couple minutes, but you know something about it. I've asked some of the guys here that do the real estate stuff. Suppose you're in, I'll pick a number, 440 LaSalle, or it's now 425. I'm going to guess the thing's 39 floors. I'm going to guess that their tax bill is $2.5 million? $2 million? Some number. And,
yeah.
So all of a sudden you have half the people aren't paying, and the restaurants aren't paying, and blah, blah, blah. And does Jay Pritzker actually expect to get that? I mean, what do you do? A, if you don't have it, you can't send it. And B, do you just say, because a lot of that's based really on revenue and not just square footage, correct?
Well, depends on the type. Now, for office space, typically not. But for retail, I mean, you know, the way those leases are typically drawn, yeah.
No, I'm saying that when the tax man shows up at 425 or 175 or the Board of Trade building or whatever, the tax is based not just because you have X number of square feet. It's based on your revenue, your rent revenue, correct?
I would assume yes, but I don't know precisely how it's calculated there.
Well, so if you're in the building on the north side, this happened, Matty, how many months? It was 4 or 5 months. One of the big law firms basically told the building, we're not paying rent. You can't guarantee us, you know, our 500 people get up on the elevator being 10 feet apart and blah, blah, blah. So you can't guarantee, you know, no non-COVID transfer in the building. So we're not coming in. And by the way, we're not paying rent. So do you take that lawsuit, tape it to your tax check and send them in half if that's half the building? Or, you know, what do you do? If you don't have the money, you can't send it. That's obvious. You don't want to send them a check that bounces. But what is the process? I don't even know.
Well, I think that's that's the problem you run into, is that, you know, taxes are typically collected in arrears, okay, at least for the current year. How many challenges are going to be put in, you know, when the assessments are coming around now?
Yeah.
I mean, good Lord, wouldn't you love to be a lawyer that files and processes and, you know, litigates those?
Oh,
because
God, yeah.
You're gonna make more money than God for the next 5 years.
All right, Kyle, we got a dash. No surprise here. The S&Ps have come halfway back. They're only down 950. Dow futures down 23. NASDAQ futures down 70. We'll find some silver lining. Actually, you don't have to find silver linings. A good report. We'll see how the market reacts. We'll be back on Monday. Kyle, thank you. Thank you, Matty. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.